Hey, this is Rob Harder with Making Your World Better, a nonprofit leadership show where real stories from real people who are coming up with real solutions to solve society's biggest challenges. What does it take to be an effective nonprofit leader today? How do people fundraise in an economy that is constantly in flux? How do you relate to board members in a way that inspires them to make a difference? What are the best practices that separate effective nonprofits from others? It is my hope that through these episodes, people can learn not only what it takes to be an effective nonprofit organization, but to hear real stories from real leaders who are successfully making a positive impact in their communities. We hope you enjoy this series as together we hear how they're making their world better. Welcome to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, Making Your World Better. Today we have in the studio Mike Roncalia, and he is the Executive Director of Exchange Life Ministries in Colorado. And you know what's interesting, when you look at the nonprofit landscape, there are a lot of nonprofits out there that are faith-based. And so Mike actually comes from that faith-based orientation, and he's going to talk a lot about the nonprofit side and how he integrates spirituality into what he does through his nonprofit. As the interview progresses, you'll hear Mike share how he came from the for-profit sector before going into the nonprofit sector and how he's been applying some of the principles from his for-profit experience to his nonprofit leadership style. This has impacted the way he views fundraising, organizational management, and most of all, how he determines the end product of what his organization is all about. In fact, he believes all nonprofit leaders need to ask the question, what is our end product? Mission clarity is absolutely essential to becoming an effective nonprofit organization today. I think you're going to appreciate Mike's perspective on nonprofit leadership. Enjoy today's show. We have a special guest all the way from Colorado. It's actually a good friend of mine. It's great to have you, Mike, in the studio today. Thanks for coming out to Park City.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Glad to hang out with you and Leah and get to see what you guys are doing here at Park City and Park City Christian Center. It's been enjoyable just the brief time I've been here.
Awesome. It's been great to have you. And so I just want to start. Tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get to this role? Tell us a little bit about this organization, and we'll start with that.
Well, the way I got to this role was this was an organization that actually had a huge impact on my life personally. So when you invest in a nonprofit, if it's affected you, you definitely want to be a part of it. So you know, my history with the organization was that my family, I had two parents who had been through, my dad been through two previous marriages, my mom through one, and the chances of them marrying with three boys on one side, two on the other, and actually surviving that and remaining together, they're next to none. And so this ministry, through their one-on-one help as well as their training, my parents have been married now longer than any of their previous marriages.
So this really was a personal, impactful organization that you saw on your own life,
yep,
in your family's life.
Yep.
That's pretty powerful.
Yep. Yep. When I talk with people, I say, hey, I was on the other side of the desk before I came here and was on staff. You know, I sat in the trainings, I sat in the conferences. I've been through this as an individual who partook before really participating in the organization itself.
You know, it's interesting about that. There's a book out there called Forces for Good, which we've talked about on the mm-hmm. podcast, actually. And the authors talk about how some of the most effective nonprofits develop what they actually call evangelists. They use
right.
that, you know, term that you
right.
normally hear in church settings.
Yep.
And evangelists are the most effective way to get the word out about your nonprofit.
Yep.
And here's an ironic thing
yep.
that you were an evangelist in a sense, and then became the executive director.
Yeah, we were sharing about this. My wife Jill and I were sharing about this organization long before we ever we're on staff. You know, I've only been on staff a little bit, 5 to 6 years now. I'm almost to my sixth year, but I've been plugged in with this organization for 25 plus years. So we talked about this. We shared this. This was, you know, part of our lifeblood. My wife and I also did some of our premarital work there and training and things like that. And so it wasn't just my parents, but it's also been my marriage. I think, you know, we just celebrated 18 years. I don't know that we've been together that long.
That's fantastic. It's hard to believe, actually, 18 years.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, always to hear someone's story of how they got into their nonprofit, whatever mm-hmm. the nonprofit is. And we've had a wide variety of different nonprofits here. But so now talk about what is it? What do you do? Like, what's the primary focus of your organization?
Okay. Our primary focus, I got to step back real quick because I'm my story. And I know that, you know, you deal with a lot of nonprofits that are not, you know, they have all different kind of framework and flavor. Part of my journey here is it is a spiritual nonprofit. You know,
right.
I wasn't looking for this gig. You know,
it came looking for you.
Yeah, it came looking for me. So there was a, you know, there was a God factor here that played into being on this organization and a tap on the shoulder to do it. So this was not something that I thought in life, this is what I'm going to do. But since I've been called into it, so to speak, it's definitely been something I've embraced and enjoyed. So
very interesting.
Excellent. So to your next question, which was, What do we do? Our mission is equipping others who equip others. So we're an equipping organization, a training organization. Our verse that kind of speaks to that from the Bible is 2 Timothy 2:2. This is from the New Living Translation. Now teach these truths to other trustworthy people who will be able to pass them on to others. So that's kind of our primary focus is in equipping and training, particularly to the Christian community.
And talk about the word equip, because a lot of people do use that term. It's a great term.
Yep.
For you, what does it mean for you?
Well, our equipping in environments that we do either are, we have three levels of training where you have a teacher to many people. Some of it's very hands-on, some of it's very lecture. So there's a wide variety of that. Our initial entry training is our weekend conference. It's a Friday night, Saturday. We've done one in Provo. Hopefully someday we'll be here in Park City doing one. We've kept trying, but we'll see.
One of these days.
One of these days it'll happen. And then our next level has sort of a hands-on follow-up out of that conference. I won't go into great detail about that. If people are interested, I'm sure at some point we'll give the website and they can check out about all these offerings. But the workshop takes some of the things people learn in the lectured conference, which is our intro, to actually share that with people, hear their story, help make their Christianity practical in life circumstances and difficulties. And then the advanced training is a college level training on some ministry training. It's got some roots in counseling, but it's really a training that most anybody that works in organizational help, it's a training that actually equips people to be better, more effective ministers, and not just professional ministry people, but people who maybe just lead a small group or lead worship. You know, we have, I'd say 90% of the people that come through our training are not going to sit down with somebody one-on-one in an office, so to speak. So that speaks to our other offering. We do one-on-one mentoring, coaching, counseling type thing.
Right.
It has a... I think you're probably going to ask me this, but I'll just answer it ahead
sure.
of time.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a spiritual foundation to it. So, you know, we obviously understand that when somebody calls our office, our front desk manager is amazing when she answers the phone. She kind of makes sure that it's an interview, make sure that we're a good fit for them first. We do a consultation with them up front to make sure that there's a good fit for them as well. So we have a specific thing that we're dealing with and specific issues. We're going to look at it from a spiritual foundation and that doesn't fit everybody.
Right.
And so we look to hopefully, you know, direct them somewhere else if not, but there's a lot of people that come through our doors. Most people end up going through our process. So, that one-on-one help though, I've really talked to our staff about the importance of understanding that with a mission of equipping, we don't want to just help people, you know, address their problems and get through the problems. But we hope that when they leave, that they turn around and share with others. So equipping others who equip others. We hope that we help deal with their issues, equip them. And then from there, actually, they then go and help other people. So it's kind of neat when a hurting person actually turns around and goes, let me tell you what I've learned and how it's changed my life. Yeah. Hurt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a multiplication effect, you know?
And that is interesting, you know, as a nonprofit organization, how would your organization differ, say, than from a normal training course or another nonprofit that just provides training? Is yours different or you're very similar?
Yeah, I think, you know, depending on who, you know, you have a non-spiritual versus all the way to the spiritual. I think what really sets us apart, particularly in our training, when we do our introduction weekend, I really stress the fact that what's important is this is as much or more personal first. You know, a lot of people, when they go for training, what they're looking for is they actually are looking to help other people. And so in helping other people, they miss the fact that your quality and ability to help other people comes out of what's changed and what's different for you. And so with a lot of folks, what ends up going on is they, you know, they're coming to fix everybody else. And really it needs to start with them. You know, if you've ever received advice from somebody who hasn't really walked a journey, it can ring very hollow. And so we very much focus on someone's change personally, but also there, if you know, we're approaching this from a spiritual standpoint. So, you know, their walk with God. and understanding who he is and how he impacts and how he empowers and how he equips them to be able to help others. And so, you know, helping others is a key component. I went into the training, I was going to go help everybody else. And, you know, a big part of it was getting my head right.
So the self-discovery piece is huge for your organization to start there. And then if you, again, have better self-awareness, then you're able to help other people with whatever else is going on in their life.
Yeah. We really find that effective leaders, people who are equipped are effective because they've really walked a journey themselves. And if they aren't willing to do that, they're going to fall flat on their face.
So. And you mentioned counseling, right? That's a kind of component of your organization. You know, we have a counseling center here at the Christian Center, as many people know. How does your organization either is similar, compared to a traditional counseling center, or maybe how is it different?
Well, some of the similarities, obviously we're looking at presenting problems. We're looking at the things that are coming in. When people have presenting problems, we're looking to let those presenting problems kind of describe maybe a spiritual thing that God's doing in their life that they maybe aren't seeing. What we hope to do is that, you know, obviously they have some symptoms, but we want to get to the core of the problem. So that's kind of where I think we have some similarities. When we look at the symptoms and the core of the problem, we're going to move them onto God's spiritual solution for that. So I would say that where we differ is we have a little bit of a directed process. We've been around 30 years as an organization. Through 30 years of working with people in these situations, when we can identify them, there's very much a track by which we're going to take them through. Whereas a regular counseling, or, you know, what you guys do here, you probably cover a much larger gamut than that. You might deal with, you know, behavioral plans and things like that we probably don't get into. We don't get into diagnosis because we are not, that's just not our calling.
You've got this kind of dual role, if you will, dual purpose of helping others, but at the same time, equipping others to help others.
Right.
So how do you balance that? How do you not get overly focused on one or the other?
Well, really, I think the helping others, if we're really working toward equipping, and just as I said earlier, that personal component is a lot that is really where the help occurs. When somebody has self-realization or realize why they're struggling, why life isn't working, why the puzzle pieces aren't fitting together. I actually did a conference recently where somebody said, you know, I had all these puzzle pieces. I understood a lot of this stuff, but I didn't see how the puzzle fit together. And so you guys have really helped me put the puzzle together. You helped me find the edges. You helped me stick the pieces into place. You know,
it's a good analogy.
Yeah. There was another great phraseology. I had someone at another conference recently come up to me and from a Christian standpoint, her statement was, I've been a Christian for years. And she said, you know, what I'm learning through this whole thing, and this is the help aspect, is that, you know, God has offered me this buffet my whole life. And I've been coming at it, packing my own sack lunch. And so she's really looking at, you know, the help to her is that she had a lot more available to her in her walk and relationship with God that she did not have, you know, at least an understanding before that. And so that's a huge helping aspect. So that help, when people begin to get undergirded personally in their walk with God, that begins to make them more effective in turning around and helping others. And so it really is a two-step process. You know, we're either cycling with somebody on their help issues, or once they really feel like that's been dealt with, then we're beginning to prepare them to now share that with others to, you know, to be effective in their, you know, working with kids or working at the church or, you know, one gal we had that came through our training is a hairstylist. And she constantly says, I'm a counselor with scissors because she's like, everybody tells their hairdresser everything.
It's a good point. Know? That's true. Right.
Yeah. So
it's like a bartender, a hairstylist, they get to hear everybody's story, right?
Right. So all the ministry training she receives, she can hear someone's story. She can be compassionate. She can understand where they're coming from. She can understand their spiritual condition. She can be a friend. She can love, but she can also point them to truth and to biblical answers. And so that's something that is really awesome to hear and to see.
So it's interesting because that, I think for some of our listeners, you know, that's not your typical thought is, you know, ministry, you use that term, typically happens in the church. You're saying, no, it's outside the four walls of the church. This could happen in your work anywhere.
Right.
As a hairstylist, as a bartender, wherever you have to work.
Yeah.
This goes well beyond just church on Sunday, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I love that even the bartender example. I mean, we have people who've 90% of the people that go through our training, I think I said that a minute ago, they're in all lines of work. And, you know, the things that we do deal with skill sets and things to help you be a better minister, but those skills, you know, used apart from, you know, understanding yourself, mm-hmm. is just going to, they're almost weapons. They're bludgeons. Mm-hmm. You know, when you just got skills and you don't have a self kind of awareness, you end mm-hmm. up just hurting people. Mm-hmm. And when you actually have a self awareness and realize the journey you've walked and have sensitivity to the people around you, now those skills actually become, you know, tools of help and encouragement and blessing and stuff like that.
So it sounds like, and I like that because I think I would agree with that. You know, self-discovery, I found that really creates humility, or should.
Yeah.
Positive and honest self-discovery creates humility because you realize, yeah, we all are on this journey. We're all, you know, we all have our faults. Yeah. We all have our flaws. And therefore, you don't necessarily look at people and judge them. You say, hey, we're fellow human beings here. Right. Let's journey together.
Right.
So
right.
that sounds like you approach things that way.
And I do it, and I'm not talking to people. I do it because I went in to get the skills. And I probably would have beat people over the head with them. And really the work that happened in my life was the realization that, no, I'm on the same journey, and to have a sensitivity instead of a finger pointed at somebody
right.
coming along with an arm around them and saying, hey, let's just walk this together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge difference.
So. Well, that's a very, to me, that's a good positive use of spirituality. If you want to use that phrase,
right.
Where your spirituality is actually helping you become a more humble, compassionate, grace-driven person.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
As we mentioned before, this is a nonprofit leadership podcast. You are a nonprofit leader. Your organization is a nonprofit, obviously. So in your opinion, what is the most important role a nonprofit serves in our community? And then secondarily, your nonprofit, why is it so important that your nonprofit exists? What role do you play through your organization in your community?
Okay, so that, you know, to kind of what we've been talking about as far as a nonprofit goes, I came into a nonprofit with a background in business. And mm-hmm. so for me, in the background in business was, you know, you have a product that you make and that you sell. And so I'm looking at the nonprofit going, what's the product? You know, and I know that's probably not the best mindset, but that's just, you know, how I'd kind of done things for years.
Sure.
And so in my process, I stumbled on or was recommended to read Managing the Nonprofit by Peter Drucker, and was reading the introduction to that section. And he was describing, you know, what a nonprofit exists to do. And he was, you know, talking about how nonprofits are, it tells you what they don't do. They mm-hmm. don't make profit. And he says the nonprofit label has been nice because it kind of links a bunch of nonprofits together, churches, mission, what are the, rescue missions,
right.
hospitals, mm-hmm. Boy Scouts, all these mm-hmm. it tells what they don't do. But he said the primary thing a nonprofit exists to do is to be a human change agent, mm-hmm. is that their outgo is a changed human being. And I was finally like, ah, oh, I get it. I
that's
see it.
That's your product. So
yeah.
To speak.
That's your product, so to speak, or really what every nonprofit exists to share or to do is to change a human being, whether physically through a hospital or food and clothing like you guys do here, or counseling like you guys do here, where we sit down with someone and work through some of their psychological issues, or a church, or even some of the things our organization dealing with someone's spiritual makeup and well-being. So
that's a great point. So in your mind, again, this is Drucker's a bit, really the primary purpose at some level for any nonprofit right. is to change human beings.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it any other way. I mean, I'm not trying to like say that's the only thing, but
sure.
but anything that most nonprofits do, they're trying to change humans and improve or make humans better so that we have a better environment, better community, better, you know, whatever. Most nonprofits exist for that reason alone. It just isn't as clear one way or the other. So even if it's caring for the environment, for example, I mean, that's humans changing the way they do things to help the environment. So, and then your other question was, how does that play out for us as an organization?
Yeah, exactly. If that's your goal, or that's the goal for all nonprofits, how yeah. is your organization achieving
so
that?
So primarily, I mean, we're looking at a whole person, but we're going to start with a spiritual focus. So our look at changing a human being is really understanding their spiritual component, how that works itself out, how, you know, what does the Bible talk about in addressing spiritual matters? And then as a person is changed spiritually, how that begins to change their psychological well-being, their thinking, their feeling, their decision-making, and how it may change their physical well-being. A lot of stress health-related problems are caused by psychological issues, which if are addressed spiritually, begin to kind of work themselves out, spirit, soul, and body. So you
approach the spiritual side of people's lives
as a starting point.
Uh-huh. And then that your goal is then ultimately that changes their entire life.
Yeah. Their entire well-being as a person. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're looking at. And then, you know, we're not looking for an end game, like this person goes out and, you know, plants more trees, but if that ends up being the outgrowth, great. You know? Mm-hmm. So those are kind of, I'm saying the trees cause the aspens here are beautiful.
So I know they're distracting because they're so pretty.
Yeah.
Well said. Okay. So speaking on that, then what are the traits in your opinion? What are the traits of a healthy nonprofit?
Well, a healthy nonprofit, you know, some of those traits, one of the things I think is really challenging, especially when you get into spiritual arenas, is that it not become ingrown. You know, like we have the corner, you know, us four no more kind of mentality, I think is very dangerous for any nonprofit, not just spiritual, but I think the spiritual kind of struggle there. One of the things, and again, this is a lot of Peter Drucker's input, that you not focus, the ingrown comes when you focus strictly on what's going on inside your four walls. Not being focused on, you know, where the need is outside the walls, you know, where the people need the equipping for us, for example, where people need help because they're hurting. So being focused outside the walls of the organization. I think another thing, and I really am trying to do this more for myself and encourage my staff to put ourselves in the shoes of those that we work, you know, we work with to help. And not just the needy people, but, you know, sometimes for us, it's dealing with churches and pastors. And those people are overworked, overtaxed, stressed out. And how can we come along and make it as easy as possible to partner with and to work with them and to make what we do, assist them, assist their congregations, raise up and equip people so the pastor hopefully isn't the one only carrying the weight. So I think serving's important as well. Most nonprofits are great at serving. And then also I think the other thing that Drucker really kind of hit for me is, you know, what you understand. Every organization, even in our culture today, has a level of knowledge that's significant and special to their organization. And that knowledge, as Drucker says, isn't effective until you've learned to translate that to somebody else. And, you know, we have in our equipping and training, we have a lot of knowledge we want to translate to somebody else. And if we are making it hard for them to understand, we aren't helping them. And so really, I think, you know, a healthy nonprofit learns to translate what they know to other people in a way. And if it's not getting across, they're willing to adjust and be flexible so that what they know and what they have can be, you know, passed on to somebody else.
That's an interesting statement. Yeah. That nonprofit's role is to help equip people, using your term again, to then pass on what you're training them to do to pass on to others.
Right.
I think that's a good goal for every nonprofit. All right. So what are the biggest challenges that you believe are facing nonprofits, either your specific one or just in general?
The biggest challenges are, I think one thing is just the amount of nonprofits that exist. Mm-hmm. Those are a big deal. You know, cause there's now a lot more, you know, issues that people can choose to participate, not just with dollars, but with time. Mm-hmm. I think time is almost a bigger quantity. The thing that we deal with in our arena, and I think maybe you might deal with it to some extent, is the sense that the help and the need is outside of the United States borders. And really helping people understand, at least, and so this is more specific to my nonprofit, and probably not every nonprofit struggles with this, but I think it's hard for people to realize that there are people within our borders that need help, and that, you know, that actually most everybody needs help. So I think those are two issues that, at least in our arena of nonprofit, we run into, is that there's as much, I mean, I had someone give us a gift recently that specifically said, I do not want this money used overseas.
Interesting.
You know, I want it used here because we need help here.
Right.
And so I think that's probably one of the cool things, is there are a lot of nonprofits that are coming in a positive sense to actually assist here in this country, not just overseas, which I believe in overseas stuff too.
Sure.
I
mean, exactly.
So as far as challenges of a nonprofit too, I think, you know, the other thing that I had come to mind was just some of the confusion. Mm-hmm. You know, cause there's been some of that nonprofit moniker now with the increase of nonprofits, it's been abused. Mm-hmm. You know, right. It's been abused on political agendas. It's been abused on a lot of things. So nonprofits in some arenas have bad names because of that, mm-hmm. that connotation and that kind of confusion.
So you think one of the biggest barriers was just overcoming stereotypes?
Yeah.
People have a stereotype of,
that's a good generalization of everything I was just talking about. Yeah. Generalizations. Yep. Very much so.
Got it. Excellent. So we've talked about a healthy nonprofit. What, in your opinion, is or are the traits of a healthy nonprofit leader? Because now we're getting down to the person who runs the organization or the team that runs the organization. Organizations are only as healthy as the people that lead them. Talk about healthy traits of a nonprofit leader.
Absolutely. And you know, some of this will be tainted by the fact that we're a spiritual organization.
Sure.
So some of that will play here, but some of it, I think people in all nonprofits can actually use. You know, I'm reading a book currently right now called Spiritual Leadership, and you know, you can have leadership in most areas. There's the spiritual leadership, which is a little bit different. So, you know, there's a lot of leadership tenets here, but there's spiritual leadership. So primarily for me, starting from the fact that I have a spiritual responsibility, my primary thing in spiritual work is to hear from God and to be growing in my relationship with God. And that's primary job number one, because that's going to direct and steer spiritual work. And so that's kind of primary one. But beyond that, I think, you know, any leader needs to be continually growing, continually reading, continually looking to educate themselves to become better at what they do. I think you were saying last night or this morning something about this idea of being the best person that we can be.
Right.
You know,
the best version of yourself.
Right. And I think an executive director and a board of directors, such as those two groups of people go, that the nonprofit goes. And if the you know, the executive director, I mean, we've seen it in churches. If a pastor has a moral failure, what happens to the church?
Good
so,
point.
You know, I think the same thing can go for any secular nonprofit as well. Well, we've seen it, CEOs in business that fail. So I think continually growing, continually maturing in their process, you know, reading those books, having time to be quiet and reflect, being sensitive to the movement within their organization.
Excellent. Well, one last question. Nonprofits, one of the common themes we hear almost every interview we do is about the challenge of fundraising for nonprofits, because it's an ongoing challenge. It's not an easy thing.
Right.
Every executive director has to face it. It's their role on some level. Even if you have a development director, you're still fundraising for your organization because you're the face at some level of your organization. For you, how have you faced that challenge and overcome that barrier of fundraising?
First of all, we're structured a little bit different than some nonprofits. We have a general fund, which runs a lot of the general expenses of the organization and the general outreach of the ministry. But each individual staff member is required to raise their funding for their salary.
So you raise your own funds for your personal salary in addition to the organization.
Yes. So
and that
leader,
is different than a lot of nonprofits.
It is. So the way that kind of works, and each staff member too. So they operate kind of, you know, in the Christian circles as like missionaries on support.
Got it.
So they're looking for a team of people who are constantly participating with them. And the challenge in that is just education and mindset. And I think when I first came in, we didn't have any education. We actually found an organization that actually gave us some quality training on the education and mindset behind properly approaching, raising funds. As far as we've addressed fundraising within our organization, for me as a leader with my people, making sure that they have time to take trips if they need to meet with what we call supporters or people who are funding them. I've just had staff do a couple of trips recently who, you know, reconnecting with people, continuing to stay in touch with those people, ministering to those people, and seeing those funds come to them because of those efforts. So as a leader, I've got to be cognizant that my staff is keeping their money raised and that they're out doing the work to do that and giving them time to do that, not loading them up with work, but actually seeing that as a part of their job responsibility. Me personally, I obviously have the challenge of it for me personally, so needing to watch that, but I also have a board of directors. And one of their primary responsibilities is fiduciary responsibility in raising funds. So, sometimes the board, you know, I think every part of the board is giving and writing money and supporting the ministry, you know, financially as part of their job as a board member. But we also look to bring others in to participate in that. But one of the things I think you and I talked, and I'll just go here, and if you want to jump in, please do, is that, you know, our organization originally was structured almost in a for-profit mindset. Everything we did, we charged for. And you had some fantastic term, socially entrepreneurial.
Oh, yeah, more socially entrepreneurial approach to basically having a component within your nonprofit that brings profit into your nonprofit.
Yep.
So, for example, like we have a thrift store, and you know we sell things, if you will, and that goes towards programs. So we're still a nonprofit, but we have an arm, if you will, that's has a entrepreneurial angle, if you will, and then a lot of. So you're right. Sounds like you had a little bit of that, but you've gotten away from that in a sense, kind of more to what I would call a traditional nonprofit where you ask for support, you send letters out, things like that, rather than having a I hate for this term, but like a sales component, if you will.
Right. So we, you know, we've had, I think in our early time, a lot of everything was really a for charge kind of thing.
Right.
So we were doing that socially, you know, whatever thing before we had socially entrepreneur.
It's a big term, yeah.
Before it was cool.
We were way ahead of the curve.
We've been around 30 years. I think when I came in, one of the things that I really wanted to encourage our organization is not to necessarily get away from that, but to find some areas where we could operate like a nonprofit, where we could give things away and have people, you know, respond to that gift to them and give back.
And you said Skype was kind of your model a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We used a tool originally to identify some things called Business Model Canvas. There's a book out there on it. It's a great tool, not just for-profits, but for nonprofits to really identify who your partners are, who your key segments of people are, and really what your key offerings are. And one of our key offerings at the time that we realized was our initial conference, which really tells people about you know, what we do as an organization. And through the years, originally we charged $65 per person. Then we were at $15 because we wanted everybody to come, but we'd also ask for a love offering. And so one of the things the board kind of worked through in recent years was shifting to, if this is our primary offering and we want everybody there, we should just give it away and let them respond through a love offering. And so we shifted that thinking recently, and it probably over the last year have given away, you know, I think we're reaching about 20 conferences we've done at no charge.
Wow. You know, that's a big leap.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say that the return on that, I think people are more moved, and we really are upfront. We don't make it a guilt arm twist at the ask at the conference. We just let people know upfront, we're doing this because we want you to hear this. If you can participate, great. If not, don't worry about it, but yeah, we want you here, and please respond, you know, as you're led to kind of, to give. And it's actually increased our income through that kind of, I think it's a step of faith for us to be able to do that.
But it's actually worked. That model,
yeah,
has
it's
worked
actually
for you.
Worked. But you know, Skype's model, they have a big part of their business they give away. And then they have premium services. So, you know, our conference is sort of the giveaway. Our premium services are the one-on-one, the workshop, the second and third level of trainings beyond that first. And so what we do really is those are our paid for services. So, and the reason we've done that is those services probably, you know, 3% or 30%, not 3% of people who attend our initial weekend move on beyond that. And so, you know, that was a smaller group of people, but we didn't want that big group of people to be hindered from coming. And then we launched a new initiative, which was for that other 70% that come to the weekends. How do we, sometimes it can be 80 or 90 that don't move on. How do we continue to encourage them and bless them and in our circle minister to them beyond that one event? So we started writing a monthly encouragement letter. And that letter is strictly to encourage and bless people, but we do provide a vehicle for them to give back. You know, so we get people who call and go, I want off the list because I don't have any money. And our question is, well, we're not sending it for that first. You know, and so that's kind of the more traditional model, but we don't send it as email. We send it as a, you know, hard copy letter, and we pay for that to be out there.
That's interesting that where a lot of people are going more to the email digital route.
Yep.
You're actually reversing that and going more to the hard copy route.
And we do email too.
Okay.
But we it's for all the emails and the funding requests that we have never received a gift from an email.
Very interesting.
Never.
Very
hard copy letters we do. And it's been amazing what's come back, and it's provided opportunities for people to move beyond that initial offering into the premium services. So, you know, it's just as a nonprofit, we've got to start with the mindset that we're there to give and to change humans, and then let that begin to now filter back. And that for us is a biblical principle, you know, gratitude follows grace. I mean, that's just how, and so as we grace people and give to them, gratitude comes back. So.
Excellent. Well, again, my guest has been Mike Roncalia. He's the executive director of Exchange Life Ministries, Colorado. Mike, again, it's been so great having you out here in Park City. Thanks for all you're doing. And thanks that you have a heart to want to make humans better.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. And if people want to know more about our organization, check our website, elmco.org, Exchange Life Ministries, CO for Colorado, .org. We have lots of blogs, and we do events all over the country. So we would love to have people check us out. And
so they can contact you and say, hey, we want a conference here in our community, our city.
Yeah, we can bring a conference to anywhere. You know, the out-of-town aspect is we do it at no charge. The only thing is whoever brings us in, if they can just help us get there. The travel,
so travel expenses
put us up. That's mm-hmm. You know, that part is usually for the out of towns is the only adjustment, because it's just something that we aren't investing in at this point, but that's everything else is no charge.
So, fantastic. Good. Mike's been great. Thanks for all sharing your insights and thanks for being on here.
Absolutely. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
You got it. I wanted to let you know that we are on iTunes. If you're wondering how to find us, check us out on iTunes by typing in Nonprofit Leadership Podcast or Rob Harder, and this podcast should pop up. We also encourage you, when you go on, let us know what you think. Give us a review. You know, if you really liked it, give us a good review. You know, the more people that hear this podcast, the better. So we encourage you to get on iTunes, check it out, give us a review, give us a rating. And then also, if you just want to find us on the web, you can go to nonprofitleadershippodcast.com and then you go to my website, robharder.com, and both places you'll find this podcast there. Well, until next time, thanks for listening. Keep making your world better.